Good afternoon. You are tuned into a Juno Afternoon here for Tuesday, the 15th of March, the year 2016. I'm Jeff Brown. I'll be the host for today. Today we'll be getting an update on the upcoming EYC conference. We'll learn about Saturday's health fair at Thunder Mountain High School with guest Laura Statz. We'll find out about the art roundtable discussions at the Arts Council with Megan Garrison. Lauren Anderson will be here from Trudeau Ice Arena to highlight upcoming hockey clinics. And our early Shakely will be here to highlight Thunder Mountain High School student government events. That Writer's Almanac, Burn Note Music and more today on the Juno Afternoon. Don't forget to vote. It's tonight at 4, live coverage from NPR, followed at 8 o'clock by live coverage of local state Juno elections.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe has unveiled detailed plans to build a resort casino on reservation land in Massachusetts, ahead of a meeting today with state gambling regulators. Kurt Nickish reports the tribe is trying to bolster its bid to win the state's lone remaining casino license.
The Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe wants to build a $600 million casino with a hotel, retail stores, and a water park. At a ceremony, tribal chair Cedric Cromwell said gambling could start as soon as August next year.
And you know what? So all the doubters out there, sorry, it's over. Time to pack your bags and go home, because First Light Resort Casino is happening right here in the city of Etowah. We're going to have a groundbreaking ceremony next month.
Cromwell says the project will create 1,000 construction jobs and 2,500 permanent ones. It's why Taunton Mayor Tom Hoy is glad the tribe wants to build it on reservation land in his city, about 40 miles south of Boston.
This venture will be a testimony to their hard work and influences dating back many generations. Much like our own great city, the tribe honors its storied past and looks forward to its glorious future.
But the future of the casino is not certain. The Massachusetts Gaming Commission will review the plans today, but it's also considering a rival bid in nearby Brockton, Massachusetts. Those casino developers are non-tribal. They're banking on a federal lawsuit that's challenging the status of the tribal land in Taunton. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Nickish in Taunton, Massachusetts.
Some Native Americans are seeking seats in Congress, including for Montana and Arizona. Carlisle Begay, a state senator in Arizona, recently announced he'll seek the GOP nomination for the state's first congressional district. Ryan Heinches has more on his bid.
If Begay wins the open congressional seat in CD1, he'd be the first Navajo to serve in Congress. Begay currently represents the mostly rural northern and eastern portions of Arizona in the state legislature, including 7 counties and 8 Native American tribes. Begay says one of his priorities in the House of Representatives would be rural and tribal interests.
I understand a lot of the unique issues that many of our small cities and towns face. How can we advocate for the differences in perspective and the voice and the culture and traditions of our Native American communities, and make sure that these voices and interests are heard?
Begay grew up on the Navajo Nation and says if elected, he'd focus on economic development, education, and boosting self-determination in the district's communities. The former Democrat switched political parties 3 months ago and became a Republican. He'll take on Navajo businessman Sean Redd for the GOP nomination and 5 other Republicans. 3 Democrats and 1 Independent are also vying for the CD1 seat. The district is the nation's 10th largest and stretches from the Utah border to the outskirts of Phoenix and Tucson. CD1's current Congresswoman, Democrat Ann Kirkpatrick, isn't seeking re-election as she challenges John McCain to his U.S. Senate seat. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heiches in Flagstaff.
On Monday, Alaska's Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott expressed the need for jobs and economic development in rural Alaska.
One of the most important things to the future of our communities that can help deal with so many of our issues, that can give us the basis and the resources and the sense of purpose and the sense of personal pride and a sense of personal confidence in our future is a job, a job.
Mallott says a single job is only part of building a community's economy. He says that the state and federal government can help with incentives. He called on investing in public policy incentives to grow the economy in rural Alaska. Mallott spoke to a crowd which included tribal leaders gathered in Fairbanks for the annual convention of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, an organization which represents interior Alaska tribes. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into a Juno afternoon. First guests are Katie Blagden and Mickey Love from the Association for the Education of Young Children. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So did I get that acronym right?
Yes, you did. It was perfect.
Great. You're going to talk about a conference coming up, and a lot of other. You've been busy.
Yes. Yes, we have been really busy. And the big feature this week is the Resilience and Power of Relationships Early Childhood Social Emotional Learning Symposium that is happening this Friday and Saturday.
Yep, March 18th and 19th. So basically, we have this every year, an annual symposium. And this year, we're kind of doing it a little bit differently. We have four main guest speakers that are coming out, and they're all really wonderful. Our focus of the conference this year is social and emotional development and learning in young children. So mainly looking at children under the age of 8. But this year we have four guest speakers and then a couple of keynotes who are here locally to talk about adverse childhood experiences. So
let's start at the top. Who's the main speaker?
Right. So we have Carrie Kraut, who is coming to town. She's a longtime child care provider, and she is really has a wide amount of knowledge in just taking care of kids, promoting peace in the classroom, different ways to really allow kids to thrive in challenging circumstances. Deborah Harris specializes in trauma. And she will be here on, both of these women will be here on Friday doing workshops and keynote speaking. And then Amy Lang is coming up from Seattle. She is a sexuality educator, and she will be talking a little bit about safety in the classroom. And Tara Maltby specializes in autism, and she'll be talking about an introduction to autism and incorporating people with autism into your classroom. So,
about how many people are you expecting?
About 200.
Who should go?
Our conference is mainly targeting early childhood educators, parents, people who work in social services, anybody who works with children under the age of 8, people in the school district. I don't know. Am I forgetting anyone, Nikki?
No, I think that covers it. Also, anyone who has children in their lives and have questions and, you know, maybe want to learn more about their development, how to address any concerns that they have. And there is a free piece from 6 to 7 o'clock on Friday night, and it's specifically on ACEs, the Adverse Childhood Experiences. There's been a lot of talking about this lately statewide. It's known that in Alaska there are very high rates of abuse and neglect, and there's a lot of data behind how that affects the behavior of children. And so this is information that directly targets Alaskan data and also presents some solutions about mitigating those challenges.
And the speaker's free?
Yes.
Yeah, and that really can appeal to anybody who works with youth at any age mm-hmm. or in the social services who has any kids in their lives. So that's more of a broad presentation that would be really valuable for anybody who has worked closely with kids.
What other things are happening at the conference?
Well, we're going to have some fun activities around lunch, doing family-style dining. There will be a variety of other speakers. I think there's about 20 speakers total coming who will be doing different workshops, all about just really like taking care of kids and helping them thrive in challenging environments. So,
you want to go over some of them? Don't list all 20 now, but maybe there'll be something.
Sure. So some of the other topics will be preschoolers, or introduction to autism spectrum disorder, working with high-risk students, and the community partnerships, Wuchen Working Together, Baby Basics, Keeping Your Baby Safe During the First Year of Life, Why Is My Toddler Freaking Out, skills to use to work with young children and toddlers, Tricks of the Trade, creating activities for infants and toddlers, protective relationships and resiliency in the face of trauma and adversity, special workshops on for foster parents and working with their foster children. So they really are a huge variety. There's some yoga workshops and taking care of yourself and self-care when working in challenging environments. So there's a really large variety of workshops that will be happening.
Is there a charge to go to these extra workshops?
No, so there's one fee for all of the conference, which is $240 if you're not a member of the National Association for the Education of Young Children. If you are a member of the National Association for the Education of Young Children, then it's $170 for the full conference. And then there's a day rate as well.
What are the hours?
The hours are from 8 to 5 on both days, so Friday and Saturday, yeah.
And if this isn't keeping you busy enough, you've got some other events that you want to talk about.
We do, yeah.
We do. It's been a very big, exciting month. This Thursday night, while some folks are getting ready for the conference, we also are in partnership with the Juno School District and Friends of the Library and the Juno Public Library System to bring out the preschool family night that happens once a month. And this month, the theme is Dancing Across Cultures. We'll have two dance groups, one from Southeast Alaska and also one showcasing Polynesian dance. So this happens monthly at the Valley Library. It'll be this Thursday from 5:30 to 7. There is a snack provided, a craft activity, and it's especially for families with children ages 3 to 5. So that's one thing we have going. And then Thursday earlier that day is our Business of Caring meeting. So if you're interested in early childhood, you want to get into the field, come to the AUIC office between noon and 1, and we will tell you how to do it, tell you about all the resources that we have available. Both they're partly financial. We have a couple of grants that they can apply for, and also lots of educational resources. We can help you achieve your license, set up your environment, and also provide training. And then I think
on April 1st, we're going to be doing a special event to raise awareness about domestic abuse in Alaska and specifically towards children. And it's Go Blue Day. So there will be a rally in front of the state capitol on Friday. And then we will do something special for the art walk on Friday as well. So dress in blue on April 1st.
Yep, and keep an eye on our website, aeyc-sea.org, and our Facebook page, and we will let you know as the events develop.
And there's more information on your website to talk about when the conference is again.
Yes, definitely. And you can also get more information about the conference at aeyc-conference.org. That's the conference-specific website, so all of the information is there, the full schedule, and the bios of all of the presenters.
All right, Katie Blevkin and Nikki Love, thank you so much for coming down. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I don't think so.
No.
That covers it. Thank you so much for having us.
Connected, keeping us free.
Brazilians. You're tuned to public radio here on this rainy Tuesday afternoon. In the studio next is Laura Statz, here to talk about the health fair, which is coming up on Saturday at the Thunder Mountain High School.
That's right. It's going to be on Saturday the 19th from 9 a.m. to noon at the new location, Thunder Mountain High School.
You've got exhibitors, mini classes, and low-cost blood draws. What kind of things usually happen during one of these health fairs?
Well, the usual thing is people come in, they sign up, they get their blood pressure checked, their weight checked, then they go get their blood drawn, and hopefully they check out the exhibitors. But this year, my vision about the health fair is that it is more than a blood draw. Ding,
well,
ding, ding, ding.
What is it?
Well, we have managed to get a lot of visitors, or excuse me, not a lot of visitors. We've gotten a lot of volunteers. So the line is not going to be an issue. I want the listening audience to know the line is not going to be an issue. So we have some mini classes set up. We have Kristen Mabry from Mountainside Wellness. She's going to be doing a couple classes on planning your fitness and yoga for stress release. And we'll have Annette Coyle and Cynthia Nickerson from Bartlett Hospital, who are going to do pre-diabetes classes. We're going to also do hands-only CPR, two classes of that. And then Kristen Trumbull will be doing a class on an introduction to access consciousness. So, and then we have 28 exhibitors that have all kinds of information, numerous exhibitors from our community that you got to stop and talk to them.
What kind of things are they exhibiting?
Okay, well, let's see. We have AARPs coming. They have a lot of information, of course, for all of us that were born in the 50s. Alzheimer's, Resource Alaska, assistive technology for those who need assistance with disabilities. AWARE, of course, will be there. Cancer Connection, City Center Chiropractic. Berger Bostrop will be there as well. Actually, Berger is also doing a class. I forgot to mention that. Fairbanks Native Association is going to be there. They talk a lot about suicide prevention and other aspects of health and the foundation for the end of life, if anybody's having to deal with end of life issues. JAMI will be there. Juneau Parks and Rec, you can check in with that, learn about all the, not only the children's activities, but also adult classes that they provide. Juneau Yoga, Rainforest Yoga, Planned Parenthood, Senior Services, Southeast Senior Services, Alaska Club, Front Street Clinic's going to be here at the health fair this year.
Should people come to spend the whole 3 hours, or can they just drop in and get their blood taken?
Yep, you can drop in, get your blood taken, or you can, hang out. And, you know, it's really an opportunity to set time aside for you to really consider, you know, how do you want to change your health? You know, what is it you can do to be a little more healthy? There's going to be people there to help you do that. And so I really encourage people to spend the whole 3 hours or 2 hours, whatever. Just get a plan for how to be a little more healthy this year.
What kind of things are you looking for when you're drawing blood?
Okay. That's a good question. Okay, so in terms of the specifics, there's a comprehensive blood draw for $45 that includes a complete blood count, so your red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets, that kind of thing, your electrolytes, your sodium, chloride, potassium, your liver panel, your cardiac panel, your kidney markers. So that all of that, there's 27 tests total. That is $45. We do also additionally a thyroid stimulating hormone screen for $30, an A1C for $25, a PSA for $25, vitamin D level $50, and also you can get your blood typed for $20. An additional thing that we're doing this year that I'm really excited about is Juno Public Health is going to offer free private and confidential HIV and hepatitis C rapid screening. So that is just something that's wonderful if people would like to be screened for those two viruses.
9 to noon on Saturday at Thunder Mountain High School.
Correct.
Is this covered by insurance?
No, this comes out of your pocket.
But it's a good thing to do anyway.
Yes, definitely, and very good thing to do. Come out and just hang out with the community, check out the exhibitors, the classes. Be great to have you.
Larissa, thank you for coming by.
Yeah. Hey, one more thing I want to mention.
Sure.
Make sure you fast if you're getting the comprehensive blood draw for 10 to 12 hours and drink plenty of water. Okay.
That's good. Thanks, Laura.
Hey, thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 15th of March, 2016. It's the Ides of March. It was on this day, 44 BC, Julius Caesar was stabbed to death by senators who called themselves the Liberatores. It was Shakespeare who, in his play Julius Caesar, has a soothsayer tell Caesar, beware the Ides of March. It's the birthday of the biographer Richard Ellman, born Highland Park, Michigan, 1918, studied literature at Yale, wrote his dissertation on William Butler Yeats, who had died in 1939. Then World War II broke out. He enlisted. He served in London, visited Dublin, met Yeats's widow, who told him stories about Yeats, showed him her husband's study. After Ellman was discharged from the Navy in 1946, he went back to Dublin. Mrs. Yeats gave him access to more or less all of her late husband's papers, and he wrote his biography of Yeats, in which he said, if he was reticent in public, Yeats was indiscreet in private. He confided almost everything to his diaries and letters. He said, in Dublin, Yeats is too often a subject for anecdotes which reduce him to a pompous, lifeless man, incapable of having written a good line or even of having existed. Richard Ellman went on to write a biography of James Joyce, which Anthony Burgess called the greatest literary biography of the century. And then he spent 20 years writing Oscar Wilde. It came out in 1987, after Ellman died, in which Ellman wrote, of all writers, Wilde was perhaps the best company. Always endangered, he laughs at his plight, and on his way to the loss of everything, jollies society for being so much harsher than he is, so much less graceful, so much less attractive. He is not one of those writers who, as the centuries change, lose their relevance. Wilde is one of us. His wit is an agent of renewal, as pertinent now as 100 years ago. Here's a poem for today by Andrew Gent, How to Clean an Oil-Slicked Penguin. Like the punchline to a very bad joke, the obvious and actual answer is carefully. First, you must learn to hold the penguin from behind to avoid the beak, pressing both wings against the body until you need to hold each out, again, carefully, to clean in and around the extremities. Next, contrary to logic, you apply more oil, cooking oil works best, to loosen and remove the thicker crude, working it, carefully, into the feathers. Next, you clean what remains with dishwashing detergent, 4, 5, maybe even 6 times, careful, yet again, to avoid the eyes and mouth. You want to clean the feathers without removing their natural protective coating, or else the penguin will sink like a stone, having lost its normal buoyancy. Finally, you let it rinse off in a pool of clean water. Let the penguin do the work, preening its coat and reclaiming what little remains of its dignity. Do not expect thanks. In fact, it will continue to bite and scratch. But if you are lucky, it might survive, which is the most we can hope for. A poem by Andrew Gent, How to Clean an Oil-Slicked Penguin, from his collection Explicit Lyrics, published by the University of Arkansas Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Staples, offering printer ink and toner cartridges for home and business, with in-store print shops offering customized presentations, booklets, and manuals. In-store and online, Staples make more happen. And by LegalZoom, supporting small businesses with formations, corporate filings, and independent contract and tax advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
At the dawn of the age of electricity, a doctor has invented a way to cure people of hysteria. But what really goes on in the doctor's examining room? His wife would like to know, and wouldn't you? Come down to Perseverance Theater for an electrifying comedy and find out if this new medical device can open the hearts and minds, as well as other areas, to new possibilities. In the Next Room or the Vibrator Play opens March 11th. For more information and tickets, visit ptalaska.org, The Jack, and Hearthside Books.
It's about 7:30, and you're tuned to Listener Supported KTOO and Karen Ann. Our next guest in the studio is Megan Garrison from the Arts Council, here to talk about roundtables and a bunch of other stuff going on. Megan, thank you for coming down the station today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So
what's a roundtable as opposed to a square table?
Well, we try to make the conference table as round as possible whenever we have these meetings. But the purpose of Arts Roundtable is for the Jack to host a monthly public meeting that's open to artists, businesses, organizations, and anyone in the community to come learn about what's going on in the arts and encourage the arts in Juneau.
About how many people show up on a typical afternoon?
It really depends on what I've got slated for that month, but I would say 10 to 20 people is the average.
What kind of things do you talk about?
I try to diversify it by having presenters of different topics that roundtable members have shown interest in, and a lot of the time it will pertain to artist support in general, but sometimes it just pertains to the community as well. For example, when the Art by Numbers came out, that was presented to the Arts Roundtable by Southeast Conference. This month is Katrina Pearson, who owns Taku Graphics, and she'll be doing a short presentation and Q&A session on publishing and distributing art all over Alaska. So it's a great opportunity for people who are interested in trying to get their work out or publish their work to come and talk to her about how to make that possible.
Well, she knows what she's talking about, that's for sure.
She really does. She's very successful over there.
You also work with what you call a peer grant review.
Yeah, so we have some grant deadlines that are coming up here the first week or two of April, and the Jack administers quite a few different types of grants. But if you are an artist and you need help with a project that's a little bit beyond your means, you can apply for several different types of JAC grants. I wanted to offer an opportunity for people to bring in their applications and workshop them a little bit with me, and then have, I mean, peer review is a great way to just read through and do some proofreading and check out if what you're writing makes sense.
And the roundtables usually happen on a Monday, but
typically they're on a Tuesday, but because there's elections going on right now, and also Poetry Out Loud will be happening downstairs in this building this evening, so I encourage everyone to come see those performances. A lot of work has been put into that program, and kids from all over the state will be performing live tonight. So I've switched this month's meeting to tomorrow, and it will be in the conference room downstairs in the K2 building at 5 p.m.
Cool. Anything on the schedule for tomorrow other than Katrina?
No, I usually host just a 20 minutes for people to have open discussion and announce any updates they have. Usually there are representatives of various different organizations like Friends of the Slam and Juno Makerspaces there, and so they get a chance to say what they've got going on.
What kind of things are going to be happening in the future as far as the roundtables go?
I am working on getting presenters lined up for this whole year. Next month in April, Andy Romanoff from AK Litho will be coming in to talk about graphics and design. So if you have questions about anything related to that, that would be a great month to come.
And what kind of things has the Arts Council got going in the near future?
Well, we've got Wonderheads coming up. It's our last concert performance of season 42. Which will be a wonderful show. It's a mask theater performance. But in particular, I also wanted to talk about the JAC gallery applications. Those are open right now. So please apply if you have any interest in being a gallery artist. It's open to individuals, duos, organizations. Anyone in Alaska is qualified, and it's a really easy form. Entrythingy.com is the platform, but links and directions are all on the JAC website.
Entrythingy.
I didn't think it was a real word, but Nancy assured me that it's a program.
And there's pretty much of a round table too.
Sorry?
And there's pretty much of a round table as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome back in the air, and thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, that's it. Thank you so much for having me.
This is Bird Note. Shh, shh, shh. One of the rarest natural habitats in America is found in Florida. Thousands of years ago, rising sea levels isolated much of the Florida Peninsula as an island. During that long isolation, a unique oak scrub ecosystem developed. The Florida scrub jay is one among many special animals and plants that evolved with this habitat, now protected by the Archbold Biological Station. Eastern towhees and loggerhead shrikes are common in the dense scrub habitat. But unlike the towhee and the shrike, Florida scrub jays are found nowhere else. Because they're fascinating birds and quite tame around humans, the jays have been studied for many years. They live in family groups, the young of the previous year helping to raise the current young. This altruistic behavior seemed surprising until studies with banded birds showed that one of the young would immediately take the place of an adult that died. Because they depend on acorns during winter, Florida scrub jays can survive only in oak scrub. Populations have declined by 90% because the birds have lost much of their special habitat to citrus groves, pastures, and development. Now, people are working hard to protect what remains. Bird Note celebrates groups everywhere that are improving bird habitat. Learn more at birdnote.org.
It's 37 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned to listener-supported KTUO and KRNN here on a June afternoon. I had a call from the city manager's office about voting. If you haven't voted, go vote already. But if you're used to voting at the Ockley Fire Hall, you now vote at UAS Rec Center. If you used to vote at the Mendenhall Mall, you now vote in the New Valley Public Library. And some people are confusing the Nugget Mall with the Mendenhall Mall. There is a poll at the Nugget Mall still. Make sure you vote. And students at KTOO, beginning at 4 o'clock, will give you national results. And then 8 o'clock, when the polls close, we'll start our coverage of the mayor's race here in Juneau. Next in the studio is Lauren Anderson here from the Tidwell Arena to talk about hockey games.
Hi. We actually have hockey clinics, so the season is winding down. But we're trying to keep it going just a little bit longer. And we're offering 2 spring clinics, one for youth and one for adults.
What ages for the kids?
For the kids, it's 17 and under. And this is geared more toward skaters that might be newer to the sport. And we're working together, partnering with Juno Douglas Ice Association, also known as JDIA. So they'll have the coaches out there, but we'll have gear available and for you to borrow. And skates are free. It's first come, first serve, but and you can sign up in advance, or you can just come the day of. There's 3 dates for the youth, and you can come to all 3 or just 1. And they start this Thursday, March 17th, from 5:30 to 6:30. And then if you're not able to make that one, then you can come on Tuesday, March 22nd, from 5:30 to 6:30. And there's also one on Sunday, April 3rd, from 1:30 to 2:30. We're encouraging people to sign up for all 3, but there are the option to just come to 1 or 2 or all of them.
What kind of things are they going to be teaching? How to follow the puck?
A little bit, yeah. We'll start with the basics of skating and see what the levels and the abilities are. And then, yeah, we'll definitely get the puck out there. We'll have sticks. We'll have the nets and do a couple of little skating drills where they're out on the ice, stick handling or shooting on the net or passing with another skater, working with the coach, all sorts of different activities going on at the ice at the same time.
Now, what was that shooting at the net?
Trying to score goals.
Okay, and the net being the goal.
Yeah.
I thought it was something technical, but I didn't understand.
Well, you know, we call the net and the goal kind of the same thing. So, and then with the adult clinic, it's a two-day weekend clinic, and that's Easter weekend, March 26th and 27th. Similar, but it'll be run by Dave Anderson, and it's for all abilities. And we're encouraging, like we are with the youth, skaters that may be newer to the sport, they might be interested in trying it out, maybe join one of the leagues next year, or maybe just skate recreationally. Maybe they're kids skates, or maybe with the youth, the adults skate. And so we're just trying to continue to give people opportunities to play hockey toward the end of our season.
And when does the season end?
We close April 17th. But in the hockey world, with youth hockey, most of the league is just finishing up there in state tournaments right now and kind of winding down. But our adult league, that'll go until they're about to start playoffs, and that'll go into April.
What kind of stuff do you have to do to prepare the rink for the summer?
For the summer, basically, we'll end our season. We'll take the ice out, and we'll do a lot of maintenance on the facility while we're shut down. And then we'll open back up August 8th.
It's a great. What are the hours?
So right now, with our hockey clinic, and we're still in full swing in the season, we've got our hockey clinics going on, we've got practices going on, we've got adult games going on, the skating club has their session going on, so for basic skills and the figure skaters, and then they'll have a show on Saturday, April 9th, so they're getting excited for that. We're probably going to have a tournament, an adult tournament going on. So there's still a lot more going on at the rink, and we'll our normal hours are basically we start with a wake and skate, and that's most mornings at 8:30 till 9:30, and then basically we close at midnight when the adult league is over.
That's a lot of hours of hockey.
It is. Well, and there's skating. There's recreational skating. There's figure skating. It's not just hockey that we offer. But with our clinic, it is a hockey-specific clinic.
Could you go over the details about the hockey clinic?
Sure. So we have a 3-day youth hockey clinic, which is beginning Thursday, March 17th, 5:30 to 6:30. You can sign up in advance, and forms can be registration forms are online at the Treadwell website, or you could give us a call at 586-0410. It's $45 for the 3-day clinic, $15 if you sign up in advance for per day, or $20 for the day of drop-in rate. So like I said, we hope to see you on Thursday for the youth. If you're in, if the adults are interested, that is Easter weekend and 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock March 26th and 1:30 to 2:30 on March 27th. So it's just a 2-day clinic. So we hope to see you at the rink.
Lauren Anderson, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
City and the flushing pots and cyber spots and no space to get away from the racket. She knows a place, well, an old Appalachia where the chicory blooms to a chickadee's tune, and she plucks the mint and buttercups. My old fashioned gal is a real kind of pal. She don't care if I'm poor. Once my love got mean anymore. Home to her little shack, spends the evening just a pickling and grinning. My old fashioned gal is a real kind of pal. She don't care if I'm poor. Once my love doesn't need any more, then to have me around when the sun's going down. I do what I shall. In little cans, gives them away to her friends and family. I'd like to stay in a lovely little mountain home, and with her hand in mine, forget the time as we gaze at the clouds and the rhododendrons. My old fashioned gal is a real kind of pal. She don't care if I'm poor. Once my love doesn't need any more.
That's the Carper family. They're appearing at the 42nd Annual Alaska Folk Festival starting April 4th and going until the 10th. They're playing Thursday night and Sunday night as well. I've got a whole bunch of youth in the studio here to talk about Thunder Mountain High School student government events. Thank you so much for coming down, everybody. Could you introduce yourself, please?
Hello, my name is Raul De La Cruz, and I am the freshman vice president of Thunder Mountain High School.
Hi, I'm Jacob Rosenbrook, and I'm the sophomore class treasurer.
Hi, I'm Kathy Tran. I'm the all-student body secretary at Thunder Mountain High School, and I'm here representing the junior class. I've been involved in student council for 4 years, and this is my second year in Thunder Mountain High School student government.
Hi, I'm Freddie George, and I'm senior class representative.
Hello, my name is Justice Leffy. I'm a junior at Thunder Mountain High School, and I am the all-student body vice president. I also represent Southeast Alaska on the Alaska Association of Student Governments Executive Board.
How many students are there in Thunder Mountain High School?
Student government students, there's about 50 or so.
There's 50 students in student government?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of students. How many students in general for the whole high school?
There's about 700.
700. How do you organize yourselves as far as the government goes?
So our student government is split up into five different parts. We have the freshman student governments, the sophomore student governments, the junior student governments, the senior student governments, and the all student body student governments. All these parts work together, but then each one is in turn in charge of working with their respective class. So for each class, we have a president, vice president, et cetera. And then overall, we have the all student body student governments, which works in delegating all of these different sanctions. So we have the president, vice presidents, and secretary of the entire school as well.
What kind of stuff do you do?
So we do a lot of things in student government, and we sometimes we do a lot of fundraise, all freshmen, sophomore, junior, senior, and ASB. We do all these fundraisers, just not to do like if we want to. We just do it for future events that we can use our student voice so we can represent Thunder Mountain High School. And in our freshman class, we made this event called the Valentine Candy Grams, where we just theme it with candy, with plushies and flowers, and we sold them for like $3 and $5. I think we sold more than $200, I believe. And currently, we are going to work on a Spirit Week for our Thunder Mountain High School and further events.
What kind of stuff do you do with the money that you raise?
Well, we attend like different conferences. We kind of allocate money towards different classes depending on what they need it for. We put it towards our dances, assemblies, and that's generally kind of the overall what we do with what we fundraise for. But mainly, it's like the conferences, these conferences we go to, like the Alaska Association of Student Governments. It's this huge organization filled with like different students that come from all over Alaska into one place, and it's all the student governments, and they meet up, and they discuss resolutions and other topics. And Justin can elaborate on that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So like Kathy said, twice a year, in the fall and the spring, students from across the state attend a conference where students, around 300 students, discuss resolutions, which are documents that they're officially drafted by the students that relate to something really important in their community that they want to either change or recognize. And these students then partake in official parliamentary procedure and using Robert's rules to discuss these resolutions, which can change things within their community to represent the student voice.
And to elaborate on Robert's rules of order, it's basically a system to organize like large conferences and large group meetings, and it's like a system so everyone has a voice, so everyone can talk, and it's basically a set of rules put together with respect to the majority and the minority, individuals, absent members, and all these groups basically put together. And it mirrors what they're doing in the State House right now, and this is just to prepare us for any future endeavors in government.
Cool. Do you have fun at it, or is it a tough job?
Oh, well, this is my first year doing it, and it's actually super fun. Senior class representative, the senior class right now, is focusing on graduation, since it's like, you know, the biggest event at school right now. And sometimes it's stressful, you know, trying to get everything, you know, organized so everyone has a great time there. But a lot of times it's fun, especially when you get to see the students, you know, their look of enjoyment, and when they like see everything that we're doing and just their excitement about it. So it can be a challenging job, and in the end you have a lot of rewards.
It's a fun thing too, because one thing that we're doing for the sophomore class is we're doing a positivity campaign right now where we're like writing a bunch of things on sticky notes and putting them on everyone's locker just before spring break. So not only creates a positive atmosphere, but it creates a positive learning atmosphere too.
Something junior class is actually working on right now is like something all student governments are known for, prom, which may like you may look back and think, oh, it's just prom. No, in high school, it is a huge deal. Okay, so like what we finalized so far is location, theme, decorations, tickets, just the basic overall things, but it's a huge democratic process with the student body, especially the upperclassmen, because this is mainly for them. So we had ballots to vote for the theme and the location, and this was actually really challenging because it's a democratic process and it's hard to appease everyone. But I am grateful that the upperclassmen were involved in this process, and we had to have a revote just to say that, yeah, we are listening to you guys. If you guys disagree, we're going to have a revote just for you. And another challenge we're facing would be the budget is tight, but we've found ways around that. We've fundraised, and we're trying to get donations and support from our local businesses and the community as a whole. And recently, we had a workshop to make decorations, just to fill that hole.
So relating back to your question, yes, we do really enjoy doing this. We get to work with a lot of students. We get to work with a lot of people outside the school, so including outsiders, representatives, and students from across the entire state, which is really cool that we get to represent all these people, and we get to interact with them to exchange ideas and make our community a better place.
Well, since it is my first student government in high school, I've been learning a lot of things, and I'm getting into it. And like furthermore, I'm just getting influenced by all these senators and events that I'm going into, and it's really cool.
What are some of the major issues that you're discussing now, and how long does a typical meeting last?
So in regards to meetings, it depends on the class you're in. So normally, student governments, we meet twice a week during lunch. But then outside of school, we can meet regularly, like maybe like once or twice every week to do events and such.
What kind of issues are there?
What kind of issues? Right now, one of the biggest things we're doing is we're working on lobbying at the legislature. In particular, we're talking about SB 191. We feel that it connects really deeply to our school and our institutions, and such things like that are really important to us.
And something that we've followed up on after we attended this conference called Youth Advocacy Institute, which is just basically students from all around Alaska came together to learn about advocacy, so representing their voice, their peers' voice. And that's basically what this conference was about, and we followed up on SB 139 or HB 256 in the House. It was basically we're trying to get education funding, a $50 increase in the BSA or the base student allocation, and through we're just trying to get funding for that because what we're looking at now is we're going to be losing teachers and increase in classroom sizes. So with this increase, it'd help us a lot.
When you go up to the legislature, how do you deal with the fact that a lot of legislators might just think you're just a bunch of youth and don't know what you're talking about? I could say just by this few minutes we're having here, you do know what you're talking about.
Especially Juneau's legislators, they're really, really supportive of the youth and education, but there are those who kind of, not look down upon, but I mean, I feel like they're seeing high school students, and we try to be mature, we try to present our point, and I think Juneau's students is like really, really good at doing that. They've lobbied up there, they've testified, many of us went up there to testify just last week. So I think the teenagers of Juneau are doing a pretty good job, of Alaska in a whole, actually. So,
you want to tell me about student voice, please?
Well, student voice, like basically, our student government's job, our mission is to represent student voice. And when we keep saying student voice, we mean like we want our peers to be represented because we don't. Sometimes they're silent and we want to just represent them in the best way possible. So what they're trying to say, what they're trying to advocate for, we as a student government are trying to represent that.
How do you balance the workload of going to school and attending classes with the work you do with student government?
Well, it can be hard, but just with any activity. And how I see it is that you're bettering your school, so it doesn't really seem, as a conflict,
Well, you've been doing very well so far. What do you think what you're doing now is going to prepare you for your lives ahead?
This just personally, I'm not speaking for everyone, but I know I want a career in government. I know I want to be involved in public service. And I want to be a civil servant. So I know this like prepares me so much because some people think student government in high school isn't a huge thing, but we've done so much. We've impacted our community in huge ways. So I think like organizing these events, the organization, managing your time, talking to your legislators, advocating for yourself, that's all encapsulated within our student government. So that's just one way it prepares me for the future.
And just to follow with Kathy, like about saying how all of these events help us for our future, like I agree with that because some of these events that I went to were really positive and influencing me that I'm getting more into like student government for about like 3 years. I've been into STU two years in Floyd Dryden, and it's really great to learn all these new stuff in student government, because like when I was in sixth grade, I wasn't into it, but now like I'm really into it.
Another thing that we do is like you'll see that some kids come in like they're shy, and by the end of it, like they're not afraid to speak with their mind. They want to get out their ideas. It's a lot easier for us to like listen to other kids when they're not being shy, when it's they try to put out their own ideas, get their voice out there.
Oh, well, just for me personally, it just shows how you actually can make a difference. You know, for my freshman, sophomore, and junior year, me and my friends, all we do is complain about how bad Spirit Week was. It might seem really small, and you know, we always complain about it, and finally someone was like, why don't you join student government, and we did, you know, and we have been able to change Spirit Week, and that's kind of a silly example, but just to show me, you know, you actually do have a voice, but you just have to, you know, be involved, so.
You know, a big part about student government is the real-life application of what we do. We practice public speech, we speak with very official people, and then we also work on planning events and making these huge things. I mean, the talent and the work that it takes to put into these kind of things, it's huge, and that's really applicable in the future for people that want to do these kind of things and want to make differences in their communities.
All right, thank you so much for coming down. We've been listening to students from Thunder Mountain High School involved in student government talking about that for the past few minutes about what's going on. I want to thank you so much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The forecast for tonight, rain showers in the evening and snow and rain after midnight.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210A.